I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the growing problem of prescription drug abuse. State officials are contemplating new measures to combat what they call an epidemic of doctors prescribing and people using drugs in ways that damage rather than aid their health. We'll talk about the why of the problem and what can be done about it. My guests will be Abby Kuzma of the Indiana Attorney General's Office, Marion County Health Director Dr. Virginia Kane, and Dr. Joan Duvey, Chief Medical Officer with the Indiana Department of Health. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about prescription drug abuse. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Abby Kuzma, who is with the Indiana Attorney General's Office. Abby, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Dr. Virginia Kane, also a return visitor to the program. She is the Marion County Health Director. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks so much. Look forward to our discussion today.
It's good to have you here. And I think you're the first rookie, right? Yeah. Dr. Joan Duvey, who is the Chief Medical Officer for the Indiana Department of Health. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm going to start, and I'll actually, since we'll give the rookie the first shot.
Oh,
here,
great.
Okay? We'll give the first timer. I feel like I'm in a Saturday Night Live skit here for a moment, the ones where they give them the velvet jackets and all of that. How large a problem is this, Dr. Duvey?
Well, this is a large problem nationally and also in the state of Indiana. I think it was a couple years ago, one of our epidemiologists showed a slide that demonstrated that unintentional drug poisoning deaths had increased by 500% over 10 years in the state of Indiana. That's a huge increase.
Repeat that number again. I think people need to hear that.
Unintentional drug poisoning deaths have increased 500%, and that was between 1999 and 2009. And, I mean, I just brought some numbers with me. In 1999, there were 118 unintentional poisoning deaths. By 2005, that number had increased to 394. And 2011, those are the most recent mortality statistics we have, 796 unintentional poisoning deaths. Most of those are drug poisoning deaths.
Dr. Kane, you know, in terms of obviously when people die, but is the worst case scenario. Are there other ramifications besides overdoses, in essence, that we should be concerned about with prescription drug abuse?
So I think one of the major things you have to worry about is, of course, it's life-threatening, so you can actually die from it. But, you know, if you have repeated drug abuse, you can cause some damage to your brain. And so their cognitive ability and their cognitive function is not like it should be. Unfortunately, it could lead to car accident deaths, you know, if you don't have that right cognitive function that's going on. So it's a very frightening thing. But probably the thing that's the most frightening thing is that probably the fastest growing population that's being a drug overdose are our young teenagers and young adults. So a lot of parents don't realize that when they have pain medications in their homes and they're no longer using it because they don't discard it, some of their young teenagers will experiment and become addicted inside the home.
So it sounds like we got a couple of phases, at least two, to this problem. A, people are abusing drugs that they're prescribed themselves, but also because they're not providing for the security of the drugs to make sure that other people don't get them. You've got kind of a secondary effect as well. Abby Kuzma, what right now can we do about this? And then the second part of that question would be, what should we be doing about it as a state?
Well, I'm not sure about the second part. That's a bigger question. But what we can do about it and what we are doing about it is we've got an extensive outreach program going on. Some of you might have seen the billboards around the state that say every 25 minutes someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Because one of the biggest questions here is we've got to get folks to understand the problem and know that it's out there because folks just don't know. So that's number one. We have a task force, a prescription drug overdose task force that is very active, has done a lot of work, really good things coming out of that. A number of professionals.
What is their charge?
Their charge is to examine, address, understand the problem, and propose solutions. So we've got wonderful professionals involved. I think we have about 250 folks, right, who are on the task force.
Right. There are quite a lot of people who are on the task force, and then there are committees that work with the task force groups. So the overall number is quite large, in the several hundreds.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Abby, I'm going to stay with you for a minute so we can talk. I have a feeling this conversation is going to break into pieces where we talk about the medical aspects and the legal aspects, and I want to stick with the legal aspects.
Okay.
Suppose, we'll take a couple of scenarios here. First one is, I've been prescribed some medication by a doctor. I take it wrong. Whose liability is that? Is it the doctor's? Is it mine? What are the legal remedies?
Well, again, that sort of situation, you're going to have to go case by case. That's going to be examined by the courts as an individual case. So we can't really make overall conclusions there. But certainly there is a responsibility on the part of the individual to take the drugs correctly. So if you're given a prescription and you're abusing those prescription drugs, that's a problem. What we know in the task force, though, is that there is oversight that could be done by the physician that some physicians are not doing. So that's one of the things, again, not necessarily a liability issue, but an issue of prevention and an issue of addressing the problem. So there's a lot of education along that line.
But are there legal penalties? I guess another way to frame that is, are there criminal penalties?
There
for
are,
me doing
and
that?
let me talk about that.
Okay.
We, in our office, as you know, we have responsibility for those who abuse their licenses in terms of medical licensing. And what we have done is we've gone after 15 physicians just since 2012, so more than that overall, but since 2012, 15 physicians who have clearly gone beyond what is expected in terms of overprescribing. So again, you have a situation where you've got a physician that is really not practicing in accordance with what medical procedure would indicate, and they are overprescribing. There are consequences to that, and our job is to protect the consumers in Indiana. So we are going after those physicians to make sure that their license is being appropriately disciplined so that they cannot harm other consumers in Indiana.
And then let's take the second part, the one that the Dr. Kane referred to. Suppose I don't, I've been prescribed some painkillers or whatever, and I don't secure them, either my children or my neighbor's children or somebody else gets in and uses them. What's the legal penalty for that?
I haven't actually seen any cases along that line personally. This would be beyond the scope of my office in terms of it would be an attempted negligence case, a tort liability case. I think it would be what you're really wanting to look at is to prevent those situations where people, where what you don't want to see is people, as we were just discussing, people who have left medications in their medicine cabinet, have not disposed of them properly, and they're being used by children, grandchildren, guests, anybody who could come in, you know, cleaning persons, whatever, and get control of those prescription medicines. That everyone needs to be aware that that is a danger. We need to properly dispose of those medicines.
What's the? We've gotten a listener question that's right on that point, which is, what's the best way? What is the proper way to dispose of unused medicines, Dr. Duvay?
Thank you. That's a great question, because I think many of us previously would have just dumped them in the trash, mm-hmm. or thrown
the
them or down or flushed them down the toilet.
You make all the fish high.
Exactly. Yeah. So we would like to make sure that people are disposing of all their medications responsibly, protecting the environment, and then also keeping them out of the hands of people who may be going through your trash. So there are drop boxes at law enforcement agencies. Probably the best way to identify the one closest to you is to go to the IDEM, the Department of Environmental Management website at the state of Indiana, and they have a list. And I'm sure there's a number on that website that you could call also if you weren't able to identify one.
Another place you could go is, because this is such a big issue, we've got a website on the Attorney General, a page on the Attorney General website called www.bitterpill.in.gov. So it's www.bitterpill.in.gov. And there is also a list there as well where you can have proper disposal. So, and there are a number of things on that. I just want folks to know that there are five features on that website that we want people to know about and go and look at to educate yourself about what's going on here. One of them is just knowing the dangers, learning about the consequences of misuse and abuse of prescription drugs, and one impact this has in Indiana. We were talking about it's not just it's kids, too. In mm-hmm. fact, one in five Indiana teenagers have admitted to abusing prescription drugs. So we know this is an issue in Indiana. Another piece in there is dealing with addiction. Basically information on there to familiarize yourself with the signs and symptoms of prescription drug abuse in all ages. So that should be something everyone wants to read, because you want to know not only for yourself, but maybe family members. What should you be looking for? Mm-hmm. Proper prescription disposal. We just talked about that. Learn how to dispose and where. And then clinical resources. Access information written by Hoosier physicians, which can help ensure optimal treatment with regard to commonly misused and abused medications. So know that's on there, as well as reporting illegal activities. You can go right on that website and boom, have that link to report illegal activities so that you know what to do when you see something, then you can act. So that gives you information along that line as well. And of course, you know, if you know of a physician who you believe might be misusing their authority to overprescribe drugs, you know, people can just go on our consumer, IndianaConsumer.com and fill out a complaint as well. So there are lots of opportunities for getting engaged if you think you see something that's not right.
Abby, isn't there an opportunity on that website for people who perhaps have experienced somebody who's addicted to prescription drugs or an overdose death to actually write comments or to share their stories?
Yes, there's that as well. So we've got a lot of opportunities on there. We really encourage people to go on the website and use it.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Colin, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a physician in Southwest Michigan, and I started practicing there about 3 years ago. And it's in a fairly rural area where I was amazed to see the amount of prescription drug abuse. And I was just calling to see what your callers or what your guests had to say about whether or not, from the pharmaceutical standpoint, the new formulations of the Oxycontin or the long-acting Vicodin products, how that would curb prescription drug abuse, and whether or not the new FDA recommendation for limited prescribing of narcotics to physicians only instead of mid-levels would also help curb some of the drug abuse.
Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Well, the question's a little complicated. Let me see if I can take part of it. One of our big issues is actually our sales of painkillers have actually quadrupled in the last 10 years. So from a marketing standpoint and the number of pain medications that are out there, it's really quadruple in terms of marketing to the consumer, to the point that you're having consumers tell you specifically what type of pain killer or pain medication I want when they're trying to receive services. And we have so many different alternative
people
methods.
People trying to be their own doctors,
right,
in effect.
So
yeah.
It's a problem. But we have so many alternative ways of controlling pain, but your consumers don't always want to listen to that because they have now become their own best doctor.
Well, and that's a fascinating subject. We will pick it up shortly. We are talking about prescription drug abuse. My guests are Abby Kuzma, Dr. Virginia Kane, and Dr. Joan Duvey. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about prescription drug abuse. My guests are Abby Kuzma, who is with the Attorney General's Office, Indiana Attorney General's Office, Dr. Virginia Kane, who is the Marion County Health Director, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is the Chief Medical Officer with the Indiana Department of Health. Well, just before the break, we got a call from a listener named Colin. And Dr. Kane dealt with the first part of his question. The second part really was about whether mid-level people or anyone but physicians should be allowed to prescribe certain kinds of medication.
I guess I'll try to address that. And I'm not going to state whether I think they should be allowed or not, but just to try to make sure everybody understands that physicians also are not always prescribing these medications responsibly. And I think that physicians really try to do the right thing. They see a patient in pain, and we've been taught that pain is the fifth vital sign. We've been taught that people who are seriously hurting cannot get addicted to these medications when they're used to treat pain. We've been taught that we should prescribe liberally. And I think those are all lessons that we're going to have to unlearn. And the task force that Abby was talking about, one of the committees on the task force is an education committee. And part of that committee is really trying to help physicians understand about responsible prescribing of opioids. And we are finished now, it's currently in production, with a physician toolkit, which offers a lot of different ideas for treating pain, for monitoring people who are prescribed prescription opioids, and cautions. Don't start anything you're not able to stop. So just be careful when you do make that decision to prescribe opioids and make sure that it's the appropriate treatment for the appropriate reasons. And also to look at patient functionality, because let's be honest, even opioids aren't going to take away 100% of anyone's pain. And in fact, sometimes the longer opioids are used, the more pain patients actually have. So that can be one of the side effects of long duration of opioid use, is to actually increase pain. So we would really like physicians to start looking at patient functionality, to have that conversation with patients about, you know, what are your functional goals, and then let's work as a team to get you there.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Becky, who says, what is the best way to report a physician for prescribing narcotic drugs? This physician continued to prescribe the drugs even after being told by family members that the person was an addict. My brother, a 25-year Air Force veteran, became addicted after an injury at work, lost his job, family, self-respect, and then his life. I am to this day more than angry at the physician who continued to help him participate in this deadly behavior. What types of information would be needed to make a case for having the physician investigated? Thank you for having this program. Before I throw this question to someone, Becky, I'm really sorry for your loss. I'll start, since that seems to be legal remedies, Abby, I think if you could answer Becky's question, that would be good.
Well, so if we're talking about someone in the state of Indiana, absolutely please fill out a complaint on our IndianaConsumer.com website. That would help us get started in the investigation, and that will really be helpful. Another thing you can do is complain to the medical board, which is also a very appropriate direction to go. But we would very much like to investigate that situation. And any information that you have that you think would be relevant, you can certainly include in the complaint or attach to your complaint.
The second part of her question is, what types of information would you need? I mean, if you want to help kind of build a case that perhaps this physician is not meeting his or her responsibilities in the proper way, what sorts of information help you build a case?
Well, the fact situation in terms of your impressions, obviously she's not the physician, right? So her information is going to have to be supplemented with information that's found from the patient's file. So that's really where the crux of the information is going to be. But in terms of getting a complaint going, why she thinks that the physician was overprescribing, what steps she or other family members might have taken to inform the physician about the risks that they foresaw with respect to her brother, and basically just the fact situation, what happened there, and why does she think this physician is at least partially at fault here, and why she wants to see action. So all of the information that she thinks is relevant would be certainly interesting to know. There will have to be other information, of course, gathered in any kind of case along this line, but certainly we would want to start with what she knows.
In addition to the legal penalties, are there professional sanctions in the medical profession for physicians who overprescribe? Dr. Kane, Dr. Duvey?
Oh, yeah. So definitely physicians can be vulnerable to having their license removed, suspended for a period of time, and some can have it suspended indefinitely where they're no longer allowed to prescribe pain medications at all. So,
and that has happened.
Right. And sometimes I think the Medical Licensing Board, if the case is egregious enough, will suspend a license emergently, allowing the Attorney General's office time to actually build the case.
That's correct.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Helen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, with so many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and many of them becoming amputees and traumatic head injury, especially double amputee at the hips that are going to need lifelong wound care and grafting surgeries for that area, what kind of advances in pain management have been made to prevent or alleviate these types of addictions from occurring?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Helen. Dr. Kane, I'll let you have the first crack. No, Dr. Duvey?
I'm going to give that to Duvey. Okay. That's such a tough question, but a great question, though.
That is a great question, and certainly all of us who are dealing with this at the state level and physicians and our medical schools understand that these drugs have a very, very important role to play in the management of chronic pain, such as you've described. I think that, no one would suggest that we need to entirely do away with prescription opioids. There are people who are trained to manage pain medicine physicians who employ a lot of different modalities. Now, to manage the pain that you're specifically speaking of, I'm not sure. But I know there's biofeedback, there's acupuncture, there's massage therapy.
There's nerve stimulation.
Yes, exactly.
That you have it at such a high frequency level that it sort of interferes with the transmission of pain to the brain.
So I guess my suggestion would be to make sure that person is being followed very closely by a pain management physician sooner rather than later.
We've also gotten a couple of questions from listeners who did not want to go on the air. A listener named Donna from Franklin said that her uncle died and she has all the medicine. What does she do with it? How to dispose of it? How many different pills, including loose pills and pharmacy? And the pharmacy says they will not take it back.
Yeah. So right now in the state of Indiana, we do have a law that says that pharmacies can participate in take-back programs. Unfortunately, at the federal level, there isn't an equivalent law. So we're trying to work through that, and we're expecting the DEA to actually update their rules later to allow patients to dispose of these drugs at pharmacies. But for the time being, as we were talking about earlier, go to the www.bitterpill.in.gov website or to the IDEM website, and you will find prescription Dropbox disposal sites.
It's interesting. I mean, this is we've now gotten several questions on this subject. Is this one of the most pressing needs that we have in terms of combating this problem, is figuring out a much more, I don't want to say aggressive, but maybe efficient would be a better adjective, much more efficient way to dispose of unused medicines? Dr. Duvey.
Well, I think that's just one of the things that we need to do. Certainly, preventing the overprescribing to begin with. People have leftover medications because they're prescribed too many pills. We know that in the United States, even though our population is 4.4% of the world population, 80% of prescription narcotics are dispensed here in the United States. And that's another astounding...
So if my math is right, that's like a 20-to-1 ratio for the rest of the world.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think we really need to work at prescribing appropriately and not in the quantities that we've been prescribing.
Also gotten a question from a listener named Doug who says, he feels like alcohol has as many problems as prescription drugs. Why are pills looked down upon while alcohol is permitted and celebrated? Dr. Duvey or Dr. Kane?
Well, that's a tougher one, but I think one that alcohol, of course, is legal, even though pain medications are legal, but you can go and get alcohol off the shelf, your own consumer, any regular consumer, if you're a certain age, I think 18 or 21 or older, you can go and get your own alcohol. So anybody who feels that they can get it themselves and they don't need any prescription or any extra expertise, this doesn't appear to be as harmful a drug. And so when we have a doctor prescribing a medication for us, we think we're safe mm-hmm. because I have a doctor mm-hmm. telling me it's okay for me to take this medication. So if I'm taking it, I'm probably not going to get addicted because this doctor's looking out for me, and he shouldn't be prescribing something to me if he thinks it's harmful.
Right. Is that part of the problem also, even if you're not taking the medication in the fashion that perhaps the doctor prescribed? And I think we probably all have known people like this who will say, no, I don't have a problem because the doctor prescribed this for me.
Right.
I have to be okay. It becomes yet another element of denial.
It does. And we see, too, that people will give the medications that they were taking, they have some left over, to other people. And again, they think, oh, well, a doctor prescribed this, so it's got to be safe. And similarly, kids who are stealing stuff from parents and grandparents.
That's the huge problem.
Yes, yeah, they think it's safe
because the doctor prescribed it.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that sometimes these medications depress your respiratory function before they give you the buzz you're looking for. So you take more, hoping to get that feeling, that euphoric feeling, and before you know it, you're not breathing any longer.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm a physician assistant working in a local emergency room here in Indianapolis, and there are a couple issues. This comes up very frequently in the emergency room, that people with chronic pain will come in. We typically run what's called an Indiana inspect report to see their background. But we're confronted with a couple problems. One is that patients now we get patient satisfaction scores. So one of the things that you're graded on is how well was your pain controlled. Well, somebody who comes in expecting narcotic pain relief for chronic pain, which they've had in the past, I may suspect that there's an addiction issue, but pain is subjective. You can't measure for pain, and so you have a problem in what to prescribe. Most of these people don't have primary care, so you don't have the advantage of being able to spend time and discuss alternate methods. Typically, I don't prescribe narcotics, but it's always an option if it's a matter of trust and belief in the patient that you have. And also, I would say that you're sometimes boxed in with the patient because they will list a string of allergies that leave nothing but narcotic pain medication. So they're allergic to Tylenol and ibuprofen and all the other non-narcotics. I don't believe them, but we're subject by law to, you can't just assume that someone's not allergic to something when they say that they are. So you either treat the pain or you don't treat the pain.
Thanks very much for the call, Jack. Sure. You've had a fascinating issue for us. Well, it sounds like from what Jack is saying here, we got several issues. Well, one, at least frontline medical personnel are often in a, I'll clean it up for radio, darned if you do and darned if you don't situation.
So what he's saying is that we get graded. We get a little report card. And so if I have a patient who's addicted and are seeking drugs from me because they know they can't get it, maybe from their own primary care provider, I'm going to go to somebody else. And let me tell you, I have angry patients who've been angry with me because I've refused to give them their pain medication when I know that they have another primary care provider, and they're really good about this. They'll wait till their primary care provider is on vacation. And then that's when they come to you for the pain medicine and say, well, I don't have access to my primary care provider, so I need these pain medications right away. But then when you review their medical records, you say, wow, I don't understand why you've been on pain medicines this long, and it's clearly documented in your chart that no other primary care provider should be giving you this pain medicine except for the primary care provider. And so this should have been taken care of before you even came to see me. And so I'm not going to be able to prescribe that pain medication to you. I was threatened that I'm going to talk to your medical director and see that you get fired. You're not being responsive to a patient. I have heard everything to me. And I say, fine, let me give you his name and number. And if he's happy to prescribe it or you think I have not been responsive to your needs, fine.
But is there some level, though, is there some way to intervene beyond that, though? I mean, at that point, you've already gotten some evidence. Clearly, this person's trying to manipulate the system, which would suggest that there is a degree of addiction or a problem of some kind there. Is there some way to say to this person, whoa, not only are you not getting the pain meds, but you have to have a different kind of conversation now, Dr. Duvey.
Yeah, and I'm glad the caller mentioned the INSPECT program. That's our prescription drug monitoring program, and we are actually piloting risk scores at our large public hospital here in Indianapolis. So when physicians log on to that INSPECT program, which it's easy to do now, it comes up right with the patient's medical record, they will get a risk score, and they will see if a patient, what the level of risk in continuing to prescribe to that patient is. So patients who are our doctor shoppers, who get multiple pain medications more frequently than they should, will have higher risk scores. That allows the emergency department physician to identify those patients who are drug seeking. Then there are pain management contracts. So if an emergency physician would agrees to act as a primary care physician and manage a patient with chronic pain, which it sounds like may be happening in some cases, that patient and the physician should engage in a contract that lets the patient know what his responsibilities are.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. My guests are Abby Kuzma with the Attorney General's Office, Dr. Virginia Kane, who is the Marion County Health Director, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is the Chief Medical Officer for the Indiana Department of Health. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about prescription drug abuse. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Abby Kuzma, who is with the Indiana Attorney General's Office, Dr. Virginia Kane, who is with the Marion County Health Director, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is Chief Medical Officer with the Indiana Department of Health. Just before the break, we got a call from a physician's assistant, I think, if I remember Jack's title correctly, who talked about the awkward position. A question occurred to me while he was talking. We were talking about that. Does this actually add to even, you know, other forms of self-destructive behavior, in that once people become addicted to pain medication, do we see instances where they actually start hurting themselves to get the narcotics that they want? Dr. Duvey?
I don't have any information that would suggest that, but maybe Dr. Kane.
So prescription drugs, it's a little interesting. You know, some people may unfortunately do some criminal acts in order to have the funding in order to afford the prescription drugs. So that definitely has occurred. And of course, they have not been accurate in the medical information that they give. If I had one patient who was in a auto accident and was prescribed pain medication, and then maybe 2 days later, I got another hospital who had me listed as his provider, saying, well, he's in here for some pain medication, and is it all right to prescribe this amount? And I'm saying, well, why are you prescribing this? Because he just, I know, was seen by another hospital, so why didn't he go back to that other hospital? And so but he never informed them. Mm-hmm. That he had been seen.
So the doctor shopping scenario.
He had never, mm-hmm. he didn't inform them that he had been seen 2 days earlier and had received a particular pain medication. Now, when I talked with him, he said, well, that pain medication didn't work, so I didn't feel like going back to that same hospital, so I'm going to another one because maybe they'll do a better job of controlling my pain. But they're not always honest.
Gotten an email question from a listener who wants to remain anonymous. Says, I was given Vicodin after dental surgery. After 2 weeks, I began to wean myself off the drugs, as advised by the doctor, but I began to confuse the symptoms of withdrawal with the pain of my recovery. My head hurt a lot. I thought it was pain from the surgery. Nope, it was withdrawal symptoms. I would have been better prepared to get off the meds if the doctor had explained to me what I would feel when coming off of them. Dr. Duvey, you are nodding your head up and down.
That's so true. We hear that story over and over again. Withdrawal is not an easy thing. And some folks really just want to stop and will stop cold turkey. And the signs and symptoms of withdrawal can be excruciating, headache, pain, shakiness, nausea, diarrhea. It's a very uncomfortable situation. I think it's a conversation that absolutely physicians need to have. And physicians need to realize, or prescribers need to realize, that you don't have to be on these medications for months to suffer from withdrawal symptoms when you stop them.
And note there, too, that we weren't just talking about physicians. We're talking about dentists.
Yes.
And there are
other
physicians
providers.
Providers who are involved with this situation who are unwittingly over-prescribing.
Yeah.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Hi,
what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I have a friend that has had multiple bouts with cancer, and he is in a different boat where he's trying to get off of the medication, and the doctor said that he's on such a low dose of the Oxycontin that he doesn't need to worry about it and he can continue. He's been doing this for 3 years, and he's kind of at a loss because the doctor says, you can stay on it, it's not a big deal.
We'll try to get an answer for you. Thank you very much for the call, Jeremy, and good luck to your friend. Well, Dr. Duvey?
Well, I think, that certainly is a decision that your friend needs to make and have an honest conversation with his medical provider about. If the OxyContin is controlling your friend's pain and allowing your friend to be functional with his cancer and his pain, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. And so I think, that it's real easy for that line to get blurred. There are patients who benefit from these drugs. We know that. And your friend may be one of them. But that's a conversation that really needs to be had in some detail with his medical care provider.
And the other thing I always realize is that you can always get a second opinion. So if you have some concerns and you feel that your answers weren't addressed appropriately, then try to maybe go and identify an expert in the area of pain medications and see if there may be some alternative things you could do if you're uncomfortable about continuing taking chronic pain medication.
And I would just like to add, just because you have cancer doesn't mean you need to be on pain medication. We know there are many patients living with cancer who are not suffering from that level of pain and do just fine without pain medication.
We are talking about prescription drug abuse here on No Limits. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Marilyn. It's actually a comment and a question. It says, when disposing drugs through the police department, be sure to leave the labels on the bottle. The officers need to be able to identify the drug. Also, please repeat the prohibitions against flushing drugs or putting them in the trash. The public really needs to be educated. I think the question is, I had explored the possibility of legislation to make pharmacies able to receive unneeded drugs. I would love to hear your thoughts on this issue. Abby, why don't we throw that one your way, since it's a legislative question?
Well, we have the law that allows the pharmacies to receive the drugs, but it's not really happening statewide at this point. That's something that certainly would be an advantage. But at this point, what we need to do is go on the bitterpill.in.gov website, and you can see where the drop box places are that are closest to you so that you can dispose of your medication correctly without any kind of environmental hazard.
We are waiting for the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency to actually finalize their rule that would allow pharmacies here in Indiana to do what they would like to do.
Gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. It says, are some patients selling their prescription drugs? Is that part of the problem?
Yes. Without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
What are the penalties for that, Abby? I mean, legal penalties.
Well, I mean, obviously, if it's an individual selling drugs, there's the same penalties that you would have in an ordinary situation. What we're seeing, unfortunately, is sometimes you see medical professionals who are diverting drugs within their environment professionally and selling them. And that's really unfortunate. Obviously, there might be a prosecutor who wants to pursue that on a criminal level, but there are also measures that we can take in terms of disciplining the license of that medical professional. So, unfortunately, we see this in all of the medical professions, but particularly in nursing, we've seen a lot of these diversion situations.
Go ahead, Dr. Duvey.
Well, I was going to say that we know that 3/4 of the prescription narcotics out there that are being used for non-medical reasons were prescribed to somebody else. So whether they're shared or sold or stolen, but they were prescribed to somebody else, not to the person who's using them.
David, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first, peace and God bless to one and all. You mentioned more on alternative medicines and some couple other things that I would suggest and put out there for everyone. There's something that's been practiced in India for 5,000 years. It's called Ayurvedic medicine, which means science of life. And it seems that most of the things in the here in the United States have to do with just masking over the symptoms, like pain management, rather than getting to the source. And if more were encouraged into getting to the real source of what it is, then this number that you said earlier in the show of 80% of the prescriptions wouldn't be in this country when we only have, 4% of the world's population. It just seems to get what the real issue is, because when you get to the real issue, then the pain, whatever it is, goes away. I heard a story once of a physician who was in the prison system, and he did not have access to modern pharmaceuticals. All he had was water, and said most pain, not all pain, but virtually all pain, is our body's lack of water. You drink one, and then a second, and a third 8-ounce glass of water, and most pain will diminish and go away. It's just a phenomenal thing how we've gotten into that sort of thing. The other,
David, we've got other callers, so let me try to get an answer to your question or comment here. Thanks very much for the call. Well, in terms of that, is part of the problem that the approach that we use perhaps these medicines too much to begin with? I'm going to take that as the point. Dr. Duvey.
Yeah, absolutely. With the tremendous increase in prescribing, we haven't really seen a commensurate reduction in pain levels. So we know that we're over-prescribing and under-treating pain. Pain remains under-treated. And I think that pain is very much a function of our brains. That's where we receive those pain signals, and it translates into the pain we feel. And for every person, pain is different. So there will be approaches that work for some people and not for other people. But I agree with the caller that there are other modalities that can be used to address pain, including biofeedback and acupuncture and massage therapy and diet and exercise, and the list could go on and on.
A listener named Kristen has asked a question via Facebook that's on point here. It says, what about the role that insurance companies play in this problem? I had pain in my leg for 2 years, with my doctor's only solution being pain meds, which my insurance company would have willingly paid for quite some time. To solve the problem, I went to a holistic chiropractor who found old muscle adhesions. Problem solved in 5 visits, but the insurance company refuses to pay for them. Is some of it that this is a problem that what will get paid for is driving some of this? Dr. Kane, you're nodding your head emphatically.
Yeah, so that's it's a really tough issue, and I think it's a tough issue for a lot of insurance companies, because they like the tried and true research evidence-based treatments, and sometimes some of our newer treatments or newer issues, it takes almost 15 years, 12 to 15 years, they say, for it to be adopted as traditional or ready medicine. And so most insurance companies don't approve any new modalities, but a lot of them do have special advisory committees of a panel of medical providers that, if you can make the case, they may consider that. Because I will be honest, one of our leading insurance carriers, we had a new technique that was derived, a new surgery derived out of China that Indiana University was bringing here, and the well-known minister got denied this procedure, and from the insurance company got denied a second time, and we did an appeal process, and they were able to approve it. But you do run the risk if it's a new modality.
Dr. Duvey.
Well, this is an issue that is being addressed at the national level, and insurance companies are at the table. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are very interested in this issue, calling this an epidemic. So insurance companies are at the table nationally. We hope to encourage them to work with us locally also, but I think there will be options now that we're having that discussion.
Chase, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just curious what the doctors would say. I was listening to NPR the other day, and they had a program on. The lady was talking about pseudoephedrine and the problems that it can cause with because people use it to make methamphetamine, And I know that that's not currently a prescription drug, but she had said that, like in Indiana and other states, they've tried to make that a prescription drug, and the pharmaceutical markets kind of had a backlash and kind of kept that from happening. And so I'm just curious as to what their opinions are as to whether they think that that's something that should be made a prescription drug. And I know, like, I think the average consumer on the face of it, like my dad, for instance, I've talked with him about it, and his initial reaction is, well, I don't want to have to go to the doctor to get a prescription every time I have a cold. But, you know, I think it's just a situation where people don't understand the effect that it could, the positive effect that it could have in terms of reducing the rate of problems that people have with meth. So I'm just curious as to what the doctors would say in terms of whether they think that would be a good idea to make that a prescription.
Let me try to get you an answer. Thanks very much for the call, Chase. Well, should it be a prescription drug, Dr. Duvey?
I think from the public health perspective, we're always trying to balance the safety of the population with access to services and care. So it's a question that has been debated. I think it will continue to be debated. I'm not sure I have an answer. I can understand both sides.
Well, Dr. Kane, since I asked for the doctor's
opinions, please.
What's yours?
It's such a tough issue, and the problem is that We have a methamphetamine problem here in Indiana, and so that people are abusing the product that they can get off a shelf. And so, but at the other side of the coin, you've got hundreds of thousands, millions of folks who may have a cold, and so do we punish the majority of those individuals for those fewer number folks who are doing things illegally? And so it's very tough for me to kind of answer that question. I really probably have to look and review that very, very carefully.
Well, since we're getting tight on time here, this is a real quick one. We've established that there's a problem here, a significant one.
So I think people should really realize that out of the entire United States, Indiana was one of four states that actually quadrupled their number of prescription drugs mortality. So we're one of the four worst in the country in terms of how rapid the number of prescription drugs have become a problem here in Indiana.
So there's no good news there.
There's great news here. I think the great news is that we've got a responsible state attorney general. We've got a great coalition here, and we're finally getting the message in the marketing out, and we appreciate your radio station and your host.
Real quickly, Abby, you get the last word.
Yeah, I just wanted you to know that the Attorney General has actually launched an anti-smurfing public awareness campaign, because this really is an issue in Indiana. And smurfing is when people buy their legal limit of cold and allergy medicine and use them to sell them to other people to make meth, which is a real issue in this state.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank you all for being with us. We will be back next week. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.